This is a Pinball News production.
Thanks, Rob, and everybody for coming out early this Saturday morning. I've been coming to Expo for about the last 8 years. The first time I looked at UV inkjet technology for restoring play fields, which I'm still doing. So there's no color span back in my city that my printer has paid for it probably six years back, and it's still working out. So we're still restoring play fields. 2 years ago, I finally lucked out and found a printer in Halifax that will print to tempered glass. So that's where I started with four Stern titles. And we did that for just over a year, a single pass. I'll just explain the process. So on the glass, when we first started out, I would ask for a color art file. So the art has to be 300 DPI or better. It could be something as simple as Photoshop, Adobe Illustrator, Corel, or some other file. So how the process happens, somebody works on it, scans a piece of glass or a play field, does all the art, breaks it down into a file, and then it comes in, and then what happens for printing the glass, you get a color file, then there is a white file. So the white file is everything on the glass except for bare glass areas. So for your displays or the old EMs, that would be like your credit wheel and this, some other stuff. So any clear glass wouldn't be white. When people do the white file and they send it in, they're asked to pick another color that's not being used in the color file. Because like if you look at a screen, it's all white and the printer won't be able to figure out what's there and what's not. And then the blocking layer is everything that's going to be blocked out. So the white file is the easy one, and then you can take your blocking file and use the white file and kind of overlap it. So that's how the glasses are done. So back a couple of years ago at Allentown, I brought the four Stern titles in, and I gave them away for free for people to put in their games if they had them on free play. So we got to see the back glasses and the heads with either 44, 47s, or new LED lighting. So the initial glasses, when you're at the player's perspective, they look pretty good, but they were a little bit washed out. People would say they look a little washed out. The colors were good, but what had happened is I didn't realize you had to go a step further and actually double hit it for color, double hit it for white, and that would definitely make the colors more vibrant and pop them out. So that's what I finally moved. I've been trying to work with Rick Bartlett, Planetary Pinball, for a Bally Williams license. And after March this year at Texas, when I signed up with Marco Specialties to sell my product, I finally got the hoops to do Bally Williams stuff. So the first glass was finally approved by Roger Sharp. It's called Lucky Strike. So when I get back to Halifax, if there's some demand, it'll go up on eBay, and Marco's already committed to ordering a few of those. So as I go along, if anybody has any questions, I'll answer them as I go. So that's the way the glass is going. So at this time, I still don't have a big art team. So the guy, Mike Hulse, who did all the original Stern glass, when I was standing here at Expo last year, he had at least 5 or 8 more art files for Stern or Gottlieb glass to do. And he's kind of like falling off the face of the earth, and I can't get a hold of him. So I moved on, got a Gottlieb license from Bob Fezian. Steve Young gets a production sample to look at, and it's based on his approval whether it gets licensed or not. The glass still remains the property of Bob Fezian for Steve Young to sell. So if you go on Steve Young's site, you'll see glass production, and you'll see whatever is left in inventory with Steve from my glass there. So I usually sell direct, either people contact me or it's up on eBay. So the glass is tempered glass, and I do it in whatever size that people want. So if it's 1/8 of an inch or 3/16 of an inch, that's what gets printed. So you'll see the old EM stuff is actually full-size glass, 3/16 tempered glass. So there's four glasses at my booth. They're all going to the charity auction tonight, so they're all going to a new home for whatever. So if you're at the charity auction, you might be able to score a decent glass for a very low price. So Dave's taking the back glass around. So the guy who did the art did Aloha and Gaucho. He's based in Florida. So his first art files around the wheels for the digits. Some of his lines weren't exactly crisp, so I told him that, and like this is his third glass, and like the lines are perfectly straight around the scoring windows. So it looks awesome. The Gottlieb stuff, I have to put licensing text on the back. So the glass is, like I say, it's two hits of color. Then it comes back two hits of white. It gets a medium gray blocking layer, and then the printer comes back again and has to put the black licensing text at the bottom stating it's under license in the year for Gottlieb LLC. When I start doing my Bally Williams glass for Planetary Pinball, you'll see their hologram. I have to adhere the hologram to the back of the glass, so I'll put that in a blocking area at the bottom. So for shipping the glasses, I used to use Canada Post. Now I'm using UPS, which is known for like destroying my glass. So it's been pretty good so far. You have to self-insure yourself for any glass shipments, and that's what I do. The shipping boxes are a double-wall cardboard box. It's custom-built, same as Classic Playfield Reproductions, the same manufacturer. I go with a full honeycomb sheet that goes from the full dimensions of the box. They actually use spacers and a smaller honeycomb when they ship their glass. So it's just different preferences. I think my way might cut the cost like a dollar on a box. So a shipping box costs like $9. I think CPR is probably paying around $8. So there is quite a cost on getting a cardboard box. So what I found after some of my glass was destroyed is like I got the idea, like when I get a new Stern or a Jersey Jack pinball, they're using these hard cardboard strapping guards. They're like a 90 degree L. And so what I did initially was I'd take the stuff I got with my new pins and I'd take scissors or an X-Acto knife and I'd cut them down and use them on the corners of the shipping box, because like usually the boxes are rolling on a conveyor with the shipping company and it drops on a corner and that's where you'll break your tempered glass. So I went to a shipping company that has supplies and I found out you could buy like a 1,000 of these hard cardboard 2.5-inch corner guards for like 8 cents a piece. So I exclusively use it on my shipping boxes and it does save the glass. Like the glass that came down here with UPS, I opened up the box and I could tell that one of the boxes was definitely dropped on its corner, because the honeycomb spacers will actually compress. The Stern glass is probably about 1.5 inches from the outside edge of the box, but like it was enough of a box, I could see compression in about 4 to 6 inches. So what else I do, when I first started doing the Gottlieb glass, I would just take the glass and wrap it in paper, and CPR still does it this way. What happened is like the packaging tape can actually tear the paper, and then I had a couple of glasses where it actually came loose and grabbed the ink on the glass. I lost one glass, and the other one was still passable. So I learned that lesson. So what happens now, each glass, when it comes from my printer, when I pick it up, it's individually wrapped either in very light paper, decent paper, or they'll use like the wrapping from some other product that they're printing and wrap up the glass. I take it back to my house, I open it up, I inspect the glass to see, make sure there's no major defects to it or anything that is glaring to me. And I go and I use Windex. The glass from the factory goes to the printer. they will actually wipe the glass that they're going to print to, because the OSA is very sensitive to any type of grease or dirt or anything else. So the glass, when it's manufactured, is just usually pretty dirty by the time you get it. So they wipe it clean. It goes through the process. When they wrap it up, the filth on the clear glass side of the glass is still there. So I wipe that clean, inspect the glass, put it back in the original paper that they gave it to me, and then I use what's called 50-grade brown craft paper to wrap the glass one way and then the other way. And then when I stick it down on the honeycomb, you'll see it's taped in about 6 inches from the corners. And I further go, when I go to package the glass, I go to Home Depot, I get the, I think it's like 1¼ inches pipe insulation, and I cut it down. And what I do is I use that in the inside corners of my honeycomb with my glass taped down, and I do it as another safeguard to keep the layers of honeycomb and the glass spread apart. And if some reason the glass got dropped on the corner, hopefully the pipe insulation is going to give it some more added protection. So I've shipped probably about 200 glasses over the last 2 years, and I think I've lost 4 or 5 out of 200 before I beefed up my boxes and shipping. So that's pretty good. I use CPR for, let's say, shipping 10 or 15 glasses, and I lost 3 of them. So I find my way is a little bit better. They seem to have good results, so it could be just luck. So that's where the glass is going. The glass production, the cost of my way of doing it, it's a lot higher than screen printing glass. But the beauty of this system is you can do 1 or 2 or 3 to 5, and you can do it on demand over time. So you're not sitting on a big basement full of glass just sitting there, or it's sitting at the distributor gathering dust. You can do this forever. The technology is going to move along. So if we're at this stage, you know, things are only going to get better. So my printer still won't go with the fake silver ink that gives you the mirroring like CPR is using. For like an inkjet printer to do it, what they would have to do is have a spare well, and then they'd have to flush it clean pretty well, because they're not going to use that special ink for a production run. So like if I could get the printer to move into it and have a run of maybe 30 or 50 glasses, then it might be something to look at. But like you just can't leave the inks sitting in the printer for long.
Yeah. So just to be clear, you're saying that if you could bunch up orders for say 50 glasses that all needed silvering, they could be different titles, but as long as they all needed silvering so they have one run using up the silvering for different titles going over one at a time.
Yeah, the question was if I could bundle either one title or many titles that needed the silver ink, could you get it done? The answer is probably yes, if there was enough to move it forward. But like it would be something like instead of 30 to 50 to do like in a day with the printer or a few days with the printer, it might be more like 100 or 200. But the technology's there. I still don't know. The printer that's still using the color span for playfield restorations that I continue to do, like the color span, like I say, is approaching 8 years. So I talk with that printer. He's due for some more equipment. And like he tells me like the quality of the OSA is like up there, but he goes like as you move along, like 3 months later, like the technology keeps leaping forward even more. So when I first started doing this, you couldn't do print white ink, because like the printing industry, all the products that they use are white usually. So they're laying down color on a white substrate. So within the last, like, I guess 3 or 4 years, all the companies have moved forward with UV inkjet or inkjet production that can use white ink. A bunch of them can actually clear coat as a final step to protect the product. So it's just a matter of time. Like I say before, you can start getting printers that have more storage wells. I think Rick talked about it in his seminar that they're producing like products with light sensitive inks now. So you can use black lighting and this and that for stuff. So I take it the technology is moving that far ahead that if you search for it hard enough, you'd probably find somebody that's ready to do it. So what I find over the years is like it's a relationship. So you got to try and find people to work with and people that want to do your stuff at a reasonable cost and not get screwed over. So it's very hard. You build a relationship and then you slowly move forward. So theoretically, you know, next year I might find another printer that can start doing mirroring or my other printer comes aboard or whatever, but I'll definitely look at it. But the main thing for me is like I need people to do the art files. I'm not an art type of guy. I talk with Rick and he goes, that color needs to be this Pantone color. And I go, it's not going to happen. Whoever does the art selects the color. With CPR, I think they go back and forth and they'll agree to what colors they're going to use, Pantone colors. And it's easier to do probably if you're stirring up, you know, a screen color. Kevin can color match the colors and get it pretty close to whatever they want. For me, the file goes to the printer and the printer prints whatever the file is. And that's the end results. So the last 2 years, the feedback has been pretty good. So like if I do a percentage wise, I find maybe 3% of the people aren't happy with what they get. So I tell them to either, you know, I'll pay for the shipping, refund them their money, send it back. But like if you do that, I never want to sell anything to you ever again, because like it's not worth the hassle. So there's people in this hobby that are serious anal about anything, and it's like if you're that way, like I tell people when I post it up on eBay, here's the pictures, here's the process, you know, this is what you're going to get. If you don't want that, you want to search out an NOS glass for an outrageous price, and go ahead, search away. But like everybody's trying to make this hobby as affordable as possible for replacement parts. So the play fields, the back glass, the plastics, the cabinet art, it needs to come down so we can start recovering some of these old games that are just in storage not being used.
So when you're looking, like if you're doing a custom glass for your personal project, what type of
That's a tough question. Like, I know I use a printer that's, you know, even the old color span, Dave Fix was there, we printed off Paragon, and we watched the process, and it came out beautifully, same as Flash Gordon. You looked at it, but the technology with the old color span, not being able to do white, just wasn't there. It was like super thin ink. So on glass, it didn't work. It definitely wasn't adhering properly. Like, I could take painter's tape on the color span for glass, put the tape down, and pull the ink off the glass. So with this Ose printer from the Netherlands, like, the quality is there. I think it's superior to some of the stuff that's out there. But, like, it's like people's personal choice. So I see glass done. I was at, like I say, Allentown, and I think Mad Amusements had a bunch of Bally glass, and they were like selling them for next to nothing. And I picked one up, and it looked pretty good, but like they were doing probably the same thing as myself, just single passes of ink. So what I recommend to people, if you want to do a custom glass, is either search out somebody to do it or like contact myself. So I do custom glasses for people. I don't make any money. I just want to promote the product. So if you approach me, I usually sell and ship the glass for $200. So like, you know, you can search out a printer. I know my process is bulletproof. It doesn't matter what size the glass is or the thickness. I order it on demand. So you know you're getting tempered glass. You know the process is there. You know the shipping box is there. So I tell people, you know, somebody comes back and says to me, well, I can run down to the local shop and get it done for $60 or $80. I go, go right ahead. Like, fill your boots. See what you get. If the results are good, fine. But you're really rolling the dice. So where I'm moving now with this type of production, like I'm already, to get back to the play fields, I'm starting the process of building brand new play fields, and we're going to use the Yosei printer to lay down the white and do the color. I've already got all the light lenses from Foremost Plastic. So Marco Specialties is where I buy my light lenses. I definitely pay more than what CPR and other producers can buy their light lenses from Foremost Plastics. But like, everybody's heard the horror stories about dealing with Foremost Plastics. So there's actually a lady that does the purchasing with Marco. She seems like she can expedite this stuff through Foremost, and you actually get what you need in a reasonable amount of time. So 90% of the light lenses, Marco was still sitting on them for Stargazer and See Which play fields. And I'm going to do custom conversions for Bally Dolly Parton. So out of all those light lenses, 90% I ordered right away. It was like about 2,000 US. And now the other 10%, they were able to get it through Foremost within 3 to 6 weeks. So you keep hearing the stories about 9 months waiting for plastics. You know, if you go through them, that might be the case. If you go through another vendor that's dealing with Foremost, maybe it's a lot quicker. So I think that's about it on the glasses. I just want to touch up, like I say, where I'm going production-wise on play fields. Yeah.
How do you select which ones you're going to copy and store? How do you sort of say, I'm going to do this one part of them?
Yeah, the question is, how do you decide what type of product you're going to run? It's all based on, like I say, who comes forward with art. I'm not an art guy. I do a 6-day-a-week job for my city back home. I come home, I see my wife, I start working on pinball. If my buddies come over, we drink beer and we play pinball. So it's like, that's why things are slowly moving along. And I fall into the same boat as everybody else that's producing stuff. You come up with these unrealistic timelines. So like, I started saying off back in April, I'm going to do the Stargazer and See Which play fields. And I think I can do it in 100 days. Well, in reality, if I say I can do it in 100 days, you might as well multiply it by 3 or 4. And I think that's what everybody that's building boutique pinballs or Jersey Jack or anybody else is realizing. To get the stuff and get it through a process and get it done, it takes a lot longer than what you actually think is going to happen. Just for reference, like Classic Playfields is producing so many playfields now. I use the same clear coating guy. He's like myself. He's got a 5-day federal government job, so he clear coats on his after hours. The last Sorcerer, it took me 4 months to get one playfield back from him because there were so many playfields stacked up waiting to go through. So with them, it's like they move a lot of product, but like it's staged. So like, you know, Kevin might be screening, but like it might be another few months before stuff gets clear coated. So I think that's why like you see a lot less posting from them, because there's a huge wish list in the back. We said, you know, they said we've got the art on the go, and then all of a sudden Stu just shut it down. He goes, 75% of it's not finished, just dropping off the sheet because like it's just unrealistic. Question from the back.
What are you doing for clear coats? Like, did you try different types of coatings, or did you find the one that you like?
I found the one I like through a lot of error. So all my clear coating, I have to contract out, same as the printing and everything else. Everything's contracted out because I can't afford the cost of the equipment, and I've got a day job, like I say. For CPR with Kevin, that is his life and that is his job. So he might be working 7 days a week unless he takes a week vacation here and there. So he goes nonstop producing stuff. So they use their own equipment for the screening. They've got their own laser cutter for cutting plastics. So the printer or the sign shop that's now going to do my CNC work has the exact same Chinese laser cutter for plastic as what CPR has been using for years. So when I get into bally conversions or custom games, I'll be using that same style laser cutter to cut the patchy plastics. So I just want to, I'll take another question.
To follow up on the clear, so is there a difference in what you need for clear or ink that's printed via the direct ink process versus like the CPR screens or something?
Yeah, the question is, I still didn't explain how I go about selecting the clear coat or the product. So back 8 years ago, I used to use body shops initially, the same as CPR. So we ended up, it's a small city, so you start knowing Mike Purcell and myself talk back and forth. We share ideas, share whatever. So you start piggybacking. If they go through a process and it turns out okay, I'll piggyback on it. If I come up with some creative idea like UV ink, they might be piggybacking on it. So it goes both ways. So what happened in the early days, we were all outsourcing the clear coating, and it's still ongoing now, except it's done by one individual. So he's doing like 99% volume of CPR, and I make up like 1% for my playfield restorations, or if I buy brand new Stern playfields, I definitely get them clear coated like twice. So the last number of years, the product that's being used is called Omni. It's a two-part auto clear. So I don't know. I take it it's a product from the USA. So they buy it by the gallon cases, and that's what they use for clear coating. So the process of clear coating that I had a hard time learning, and what CPR now realizes and has proven over the years, is usually what you're going to do is when the product's ready for clear coating, it's a very light mist coat. So the clear coating guy will lightly mist the surface. He'll do that for, let's say, 50 or 100 play fields, whatever he's doing that day. It's a quick mist. He puts it on the rack, continues through the stack, comes back, and then it's a heavy clear coat. So he'll do that. It goes on the rack, dries. I believe he usually sands it very lightly between going to the next stage. He comes back, clear coats it again. So you get that good thickness on the play fields. So he's under contract. If it's like dust or something else that's defective, if they don't want to pay any extra money, it goes back, and it's either graded gold, silver, or bronze, and away it goes. So some other people have problems with dust particles in their clear coat. I've seen it occasionally on mine, and usually what will happen is, like, as soon as you install that and there's a dust particle in your clear coat, usually the ball will grind it down. So after a while, you wipe your play field clean, you're going to get, you know, the ball action, especially if you have multi-balls on these games, you'll actually see it slowly be circular patterns or whatever. You wipe it off and you're good to go. So I used to panic like everybody else when I used to get the brand new Sterns, and you open them up and you see they've been testing at the factory and maybe the clear coat is still curing, and you look at it and you see all these ball tracks all over the play field. That's like a normal process, so don't worry about it. Everybody who has a newer pinball machine, you'll definitely see dimpling in the play field, so it's nothing to panic about. All the sorcerers I've done over the years, and the space shuttles and the stargazers, nobody's complained about the finished results with the playability of the surface. So that's where it moves forward. I've been dealing with, like, the major manufacturers of pinball. I offer my advice for free on the UV process and the clear coating, because it's not an exact science. So I learned from failure over years of what was going on. So the initial failures I used to get was I'd take play fields into the body shop, and they look at it and they go, we're restoring cars or painting cars or doing body fix-ups or whatever. That's their main business. They look at the play field, they prep the play field, but like at the end of the day, it's like, how much clear do I have left in my gun? There's the play field, I'm going to start gunning it. So it'd be the end of the day, so they give it one coat of clear, maybe stick it under some heat bulbs temporarily. They'd wait a half an hour, it's still not quitting time, I'm coming back and I'm hitting it again for a second clear coat. So what happened in the process, when you start doing that, the black ink is usually very susceptible to the solvent, so the clear coat. So what it does, it curdles up black especially, so you'd have a play field. The clear coat would be perfect, like 98% of the surface of the play field, but you'd have these little serpentine curdling from the black. So that would happen, and I would have to go through the whole process again. It would be sanded down and go back through the process of clear coating, masking, the whole process. So the first 2 or 3 years going through different shops doing this, they'd all blame it on you. They would say, you have surface contamination. So I tell this, like Clay and others have put up stuff. So if you're ever touching up your play field, before you re-ink it, you want to use Napa to wipe the surface to get any surface oils or dirt off it before you do anything. And that's what you have to do, whether I restore a play field or build brand new ones. Before it gets any type of clear on it, it needs to be wiped with Napa to make sure it's a clean surface. So getting back to that, like when you're doing a restoration and you clean it with Napa, sometimes the top layer of ply on the wood will actually bubble up. So what you have to do, if you get a result like this, it sounds very aggressive, but you have to take the X-Acto knife and cut out that damaged area and just fill it with epoxy and then continue on. So I'll just move briefly on to the play fields that we're going to start making conversion kits for. We're starting with Bally. I already talked with Rick Bartlett. So the Dolly Partons are the first one. My artist, I believe, has almost all the art complete for the first re-theme of Dolly Parton. It's called Skate. So it's a skateboarding theme. I'm 49. My graphics guy is in his early 30s. So it's his interpretation of art style he wants to do. It's not my taste. It might not be your taste, but like I work with whoever comes forward on the art. So we already did this art. Most of the pictures are up like on Pinside. You can search out Dolly Parton conversions and have a look for yourself. The back glass art will probably go up pretty soon so people can see that in the cabinet art, and then he'll work on the plastic sets. He's got like a female in outer space is another re-theme, and we've been talking recently, we don't want to beat on CPR, but like he wants to do a Las Vegas theme. So it's not going to be called whatever CPR is calling theirs. It might be called Down in Vegas, Out in Vegas, something to do with Vegas. So that's going to be three titles for Dolly Parton. I initially stated that I'd probably be selling the kit for $1,000. Realistically, it's probably going to be around the $1,300 mark. So you get a brand new play field, brand new back glass, brand new plastic set, and I'll include extra slings or stuff that probably is going to break, and brand new cabinet art. So you can take an old beat off Bally pinball machine and re-theme it. So the three themes I'm doing, it could be 1 through 3. I would say 3 is probably the limit. That's what'll be done there. If people want to come back and say, I don't like those 3 titles, I want to do my own custom game, it should be available to do a custom game for the exact same price. So if you want a one of the re-theme your way, could be whatever way you want. Like my printers aren't crude, so if you want an X-rated pinball machine, fill your boots. So I think it's a great way to do it. Like we're going to move forward on doing these conversions and custom games. There's another small group in Halifax. We're actually going to start doing a Skunk Works or a prototyping for brand new pinball games back home. We're definitely not going to be a boutique builder. there'll be like one or a few pins built. They'll probably go locally. They might come to a show. But like, we have no interest at all at getting into the pinball manufacturing. I'll definitely make parts for games, playfields, glasses, plastics, cabinet art, but that's it. Like, there's enough people going into it that it's getting like very heavily saturated.
When you make the side art for those, what helps make the side art durable in terms of retaining the ink that you put on it?
So the question is, when you do the side art, how do you make it durable for the ink, or like the durability? So in the past, I officially don't say it, but I did make, you know, overlay with my printer in case, like, the title was Sorcerer. If we had a Sorcerer, and like all the Sorcerers that came in, we had one that was like a 2 or 3 inch warp. So when you laid it down, it was up 2 or 3 inches in the corner. And the printer, we screwed it down to half inch MDF to try and put it through the color span. They stacked probably 500 pounds on it for weeks. And when they looked at it and got ready for the printing process, they said, it ain't going to happen. So Wayne, years ago, he had the brainwave of doing something. I don't know if it was Medieval Madness or one of his things, and he wrecked like a $50,000 hit on the printer, and that was the end of it. So live and learn. So getting back to that, the way the overlays were done by my printer is like, it'd be printed on a clear vinyl, and then when the ink goes on the vinyl, he would come back, I believe the same clear vinyl, and he'd cold laminate it over the top. So any ball going back and forth on the play field wouldn't wear through the surface ink. And like in the past, you used to see overlays from Jeff and others where you got an overlay, and like if it was a red or a colored light lens, that's what you get, because it was being printed on, I believe, like a white vinyl. It wasn't being used clear. So like people say, well, geez, I've got a red, you know, a red overlay light lens, and like this goes over my red light lens on the play field, like the light's not really going to come through and you got problems. So I dealt with Jeff, like I asked him to send me a file and he sent me shit. So I said, thanks, Jeff, like I'll move along. So getting back to that, yeah, getting back to, yep, putting the top cold laminate on top of the clear vinyl. If it can survive ball play on a play field, then it's definitely going to survive sticking on the side of a cabinet for durability. So that's the way I would go. I would never, like, I don't buy cabinet art from Rick or whoever, but I would take it, their process, they're protecting their vinyl with some type of coating or cold laminating it.
I was just wondering if you put it on the back side and then...
No, it's actually, yeah. The question is, how is the ink process done on the overlays or cabinet art? So what happens is it comes in a roll. So it's printed on the top of the clear because there's adhesive on the other side. So when it's done that way. There was a guy who did the custom Ghostbusters on a Flash Gordon. So there's all kinds of information. He did a fantastic job on it. And that's one of my printer's overlays that we did. So I did that just to prove a point. He did a superb job. I wasn't expecting it to be that professionally done. Like, that game could actually be sold and run down a line. It looks that good. But the problem I had, like, initially with him is he sent in the files. Flash Gordon's got the upper play field. He oversized it, let's say, 10 or 15%. So when he got the overlays, he said, you guys screwed up. And the printer said, buddy, you better look at your files. Like, we print whatever size you give us. So we went back and found out that he had made the mistake and oversized it. So sent him back another set. You know, it probably costed me $400 to $500. And I said, that's it. I'm sick and tired of doing free projects. Time to move back and try to recoup some of the losses I've had over the years.
one last play field.
Yep.
You know, you obviously don't have one of the big play field presses, right, like they use for dimpling and whatnot. So with the CNC technology, what do they do that replicates some of the things that one of those pin presses would do?
Yeah, so the question is, you know, like everybody knows, Stern has this big press for dimpling the play fields, either top or bottom or whatever. We see it all the time. I think there was one for Gottlieb that they sold off for scrap or whatever. So in my case, I'm going to rely on the CNC machine to dimple the top and bottom and do the drilling. So that's the process we're going to take. All the play fields that Classic Play Field's done, it's either some sort of hand drilling with a jig. If you go to Stern, you see the metal where they've got stuff welded to the steel and the guys are drilling through in a set pattern. I don't want anything to do with that. Like, I want to do small runs of play fields on production. Now, getting back to that question, like, people get beat up all the time producing brand new play fields. They go, well, the dimpling pattern doesn't work on my game. You got to realize, if even in the old days, if play fields went to one company, there could be 10 different jigs with 10 different workers drilling away or routering play fields. They get worn a different way, or just the way they're produced, and like everybody's doing something different. Back in the old days, and even today, people producing play fields, I won't say CPR because the quality is probably there, but like, realistically, you look at a commercial product like Stern or anybody else, for a play field, you're lucky if the art lines up with the light lenses, you see it. And that's, you know, like, they can auto-correct it, but most of the other people that are producing pinball machines, you know, it's still like Gary Stern says, it's made for the operator. The operator doesn't give a shit if, like, the guy at the factory gouged the play field. Like, Stern's going to box it up and ship it out and hope for the best. So getting back to that, you'll see problems. So the Stargazer and the Sea Witch play fields I got, it's like a play field that came out of a game. So starting with Stargazer, what we did is, like, the play fields came in, they got stripped down, and what we did is we took the color art file, like for Stargazer, we had printed out on clear vinyl. And when I take the clear vinyl and I stick it on top of the original Stargazer, we look to see if all the light lenses are in the right spot and whether the artwork looks right. So in Stargazer's case, it looked like, I would guess, almost 100% accuracy. Now, if you were to take a Bally Williams or a Gottlieb or something else, you might lay it down and it might be like off here or there. Like, it's like rolling the dice. So that's what we found, like, getting back to the sorcerer days. One time I had 5 sorcerers laid out on a table, and the light lenses weren't the same on any of them. So they were close, but, like, the light lenses on the top could be left, could be right, could be up, could be down. You look at the bottom, the same sort of thing. So initially how the printer went by the process is, like, if you're standing at the play field, the majority of the time you're probably looking at the bottom third of the play field. So try to get the light lenses lined up with the art for sure on the bottom third, and then try to get it as good as possible for the rest of the two thirds. So I did space shuttle restorations. The file Ed gave me, when you took it to a production play field, the big arrow was off like almost a half an inch on all the restores I did. That's the art. I could manipulate the art, so that's what I printed. So when CPR did their run, they can auto-correct everything. So that's the way to go. That's what I'm doing with the new Stargazer and Sea Witch and Dolly Parton conversion ones, is like the company is scanning it. They're doing the CAD file. They'll get a copy of the art file to lay on top, so everything should be to a much higher tolerance than what we see today on play fields. So hopefully everything is a much better result.
It's all being drilled and dimpled before they ever screen it.
Yeah, the question was, is the play field fully dimpled and drilled and routered and everything else before the artwork gets done. That is correct. I have no idea how CPR does their play fields. The process I'm going to do is like when the play fields are routered, the light lenses go in. I'm going to have a closer tolerance. I'm going to try and get my light lenses to sit almost horizontally flush with the play field top. And I'm going to do hand sanding, not a drum sander or a belt drum sander, because it's kind of aggressive. That's why you see burnout, especially on outside edges on play fields or down the middle. If it's down the middle, you'll never see it because it'll get inked over and clear coated. You could gouge out a pinball play field, and when it's inked and cleared, you would never know it unless you stuck your head down and you start trying to see where the grain of the plywood veneer is. So that's the process I'm going to go towards. Question at the back.
So you're making a new play field with wood. What kind of wood are you using?
Brand new wood. So Americans are still kind of sensitive over the Cold War with Russia. So it's actually Russian birch that CPR is using, I use, Merco's probably using it, everybody's probably using what's called Russian birch. But like Americans don't like Russia still, so it's called Baltic birch. But like your Baltic birch doesn't come from a Baltic country, it's coming more than likely from Russia. So that's the product that we're using. I try to keep my sourcing in Canada for my plywood. So in the past, like CPR was using, I think it was Marion in Wisconsin for years, and then all of a sudden the quality went shit. So then they started looking elsewhere. So we've both been looking in Canada to see what the Canadian mills can do. But like realistically, you look at a mill, and the wood wholesaler that supplies the building industry or the cabinet guys or ourselves, they'll go out to the mills and say, will you produce this product at, for me, I'm going with the standard size, half inch. I'm not going with this crap, 17/32 was always used, blah, blah, blah. And it's not happening. And it's definitely not the weird sizes you get at Home Depot, which isn't like half inch or slightly bigger than half inch. So the plywood I got 19 sheets. They shorted me one. And the cost was almost $2,500 Canadian for 19 sheets. So it works out to be about $140 for a sheet. The way they grade it, it's hard maple veneer. The good side is graded. They call it A2. So you look at it, it looks very good veneer. But it's actually very thin veneer. Like if you went to a modeling shop for airplanes and you look at the thin wood, that's how thin the stuff is getting. So you got to be very cautious about sanding it and doing everything to it. CPR tries getting it maybe twice as thick, but it's getting really hard to find this wood. So I think lately they're trying to go back to the supplier for Churchill. So the stuff that you see for Stern or Jersey Jack or wherever this wood's coming, that's where they're going back to trying to source it. I'm going to be a lot smaller. I don't care as long as the finished results are really good. I'm going to try and keep the wood coming from Canadian manufacturers. Any other questions? Well, I'm going to thank everybody. And like I say, just keep your eye out on what's going on in the industry. And I answer emails. The biggest thing I get, like being a vendor or a supplier, is like people dump everybody on me. So Steve Young, if he gets hassled from somebody looking for glass, he goes, contact John. So if you don't see my art up on eBay as a product for sale and you don't see it on my site, if you can't do the art, then don't even bother asking me because, like, I can't do it. Getting back to the Gottlieb glass, there is a master sheet. So Bob Vezian provides the vendors like Shea, Webb, CPR, myself with a master list of who's done what glass. So I'll look at the sheet, and then if the title's not there and somebody has that art, I send an email off to Bob Fezian. He looks at his sheet, see who's communicating with him, and he'll tell me yes or no whether I can run with that project. My new license with Rick with Planetary Pinball, the first glass is Lucky Strike. That's approved. I did have art for two or three other glasses. When I approached Rick, he said, no, some guy's been working on this for years. You're not doing it. So you roll the dice. Like, I could do that glass tomorrow, but like somebody else has already said they're doing this project. So we'll see where that goes, whether it's like, you know, a master list at other people where the stuff never comes and then other people can move forward. All right, so thank you very much.